Today on the Cooligans, we've got a special guest co-host because Alexis is in Paris. The one and only Taylor Twellman. Say hello, Taylor.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Alexis, I love you. Bye.
So we talk about the MLS Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. We preview some MLS Cup. And we are joined by the one and only Clint Dempsey. We got a packed show. So all
Deuce.
This and more today on the Cooligans. Yes, Alexis is gone again. Why does he always seem to be unavailable during the most high-profile weekends of American soccer? But you know what? This is why we call in the relievers, okay? The righty, the closer to come through whenever we need it. This just highlights the fact that I have this man's phone number just highlights the years of effort, the years of climbing the ladder.
How did you get my number?
There we go. We'll figure that out later. He doesn't need to know. Everybody, the voice you're hearing, the one and only, my guest co-host today, the one and only Taylor Twellman of MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Taylor, how are you doing, man?
Good. So just let's get right to it. New York City fans, how pissed off were they listening to me during that game?
That's what, you know, I want to talk about the biased commentary on Apple TV,
yeah,
okay?
Of course you do.
All right.
I mean, it's amazing. I literally was complimentary Pascal Janssen, Hannes Wolf, New York City, the fact that they're even in that game. And yet all I hear from New York City fans is all you talk about is Messi. They won 5-1.
Yes, but for 67 minutes, it wasn't 5-1. You know what I mean? It was a very close.
For 42 minutes, it was 2-0.
That's true. But this, okay, we'll sort out the gripes of NYCFC
There's
fans.
There's no gripes. I love it. That's why I love fans. Absolutely. I have zero problem with it.
We're going to talk about, obviously, the conference finals. Also, be on the lookout. We have a really fun interview that we did with Clint Dempsey, the one and only.
Awesome.
And we talk a lot of USMNT, some MLS stuff as well. That'll be coming up in a second. The MLS Cup final is officially set. Can Inter Miami be stopped, or will Messi finally capture his first MLS Cup, which is why it is today's top topic.
This is the top topic.
Let's start with the Eastern Conference final. Yes, Inter Miami wins against NYCFC 5-1. This, you see, if you're watching the show, I'm wearing my NYCFC Hawaiian shirt to represent the recent trip to Miami. And this is, we were talking beforehand. This was we weren't even supposed to be here today. Kind of game. Whatever happened here was, I think I would have been fine with almost any result besides this one. A 5-1 to me isn't representative of what this game was for the majority of it.
Agreed.
But the first point I would make is the performance of the left back, Raul Gustavo. I don't know what exactly was the game plan. I don't know if Messi was like, that guy, he's the one we're going after. Because he made, and he was a summer signing. He's been pretty good, a pretty good pickup. Mm-hmm. And he made every mistake he could make in the season. He made it in this one game. So that was my first takeaway. But when you're watching that result, I mean, I think the third goal, that was really the difference. That broke the hearts of the NYCFC fans and players. But where did you see it anywhere else? What was your biggest takeaway from that game?
Oh, man. Biggest takeaway was if Alonso Martinez is healthy, it's a different game.
Sure.
Just because I've done more Messi games and Miami games than anyone, and I've seen them at their most vulnerable times, and it's with any kind of attacking player, a number nine that's got pace, that can run off the ball, that's extremely clinical in his finishing. I'm describing Alonso Martinez to the T. The fact that he scored 17 goals this year, 12 of those game winners, they missed him. And so credit to New York City without Alonso Martinez and Andres and beating Philadelphia in the manner that they did. But going into the game, that's a tall task because you have to have some threat going the other way. Now, I think New York City, I agree with you, Christian, on this, is that I don't think it was indicative of the kind of game that was had. Messi didn't do a lot. I know that sounds weird,
yeah,
even though he had assists, but you see what I'm saying. Like, it wasn't the typical, I think New York City did a real good job of making Messi and Miami play through the outside. Here's a feather in my cap. I didn't mention Gustavo having a shocker, by the way, and I easily could have. mention it once.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness to Gustavo, he's a center back.
I know.
He's a center back. And so when the lineup came out, and I said it in pregame and I said it in the first 5 minutes, I think New York City with Kevin O'Toole wanted him to be more central thinking to limit Messi, but I think Gustavo needed him to be more of a wingback. So there was this little bit, six and a half one way, half a dozen the other, yeah. Is, okay, you limit Messi through the middle, you go outside. Well, the problem was when they went outside, Gustavo got caught. In saying that, Gustavo got caught by Allende scoring a world-class header.
It's an unbelievable
ball from Jordi Alba. But that header is not really on Gustavo, in my opinion. It's a great run. I actually think Matt Freese could have been a little bit better if we want to have a real conversation about positioning and whatnot. But in my opinion, you tip your cap and you say, great header from Allende. All five goals from Miami were against the run of play. And the goal from New York City was against the run of play. So, Christian, was the oddest game to commentate on because there was no flow to the game. However, Fernandez scores, it's 2-2. And that's the reality of the situation, right? And so I think for the listeners here, this is what I would say to you about Inter Miami with Lionel Messi on the field. You have to be perfect. You have to be perfect. And by perfect, I mean when you get an opportunity, you can't really miss it. And I'm not saying it was a sitter. I'm not saying that it was a chance that Fernandez completely bluffed. That's how I'm saying. Rios Novo made a good save. But the point is, he didn't score. And when you don't take advantage of those few chances that you do get against this Miami team that defensively all of a sudden they have figured it out, then Christian, you're up against it because I've never seen this team more balanced. I've never seen this team more confident without Suarez on the field. Allende's got, what, 8 goals in the playoffs? It's absolutely ridiculous.
And
Silvetti's on fire.
And
so
to add to that point about Suarez being benched, and you know, once he got suspended, that was the first thing I said. I'm like, if Mascherano has the courage, this is the move. You bench him, they will be better, and it's been objectively better. Where even to the degree where Busquets is retiring, Alba's retiring, I could imagine somebody saying like, "Hey, Suarez, you think it's time to hang him up?" So that is how much of a difference not having him on the pitch. Is there any storyline around his benching of he doesn't seem to have an issue with it.
No, but Christian, to the listeners' understanding of the situation, remember he was an idiot in the League's Cup final and got suspended. This isn't the first time they haven't played without Messi. The point is, though. The point is, though, Messi's through the middle. They haven't done that part yet. Yeah. They haven't done that part. And Messi is a false nine with two players that are vertical. They were playing Baltasar Rodriguez as a left winger, not Silvetti when Suarez was out of the lineup. They flipped that. That's the difference. Unequivocally, that's the difference. Because New York City found out, Cincinnati found out, Nashville found out. When now the ball is played into Messi, wherever he is on the field, you've got to respect the pace around him. They didn't have to respect that because there was no one other than Allende, so you could tilt the field to one side to deal with one guy going forward. Now you can't, and it's just really, I use the word unplayable. New York City fans hit my social media and said, you're a Messi homer. The reality is this, 13 goals in 3 games. They're unplayable right now.
Yeah.
They're unplayable.
It really, I mean, the watching, especially Silvetti.
13 goals in 3
and only
knockout
one,
round games, Christian.
And only 1 goal conceded, which is unreal, which is, you know, that is not is not what the season looked like
at
all. It's just so remarkable that this was something that could be improved so drastically in such a short amount of time, given what the season looked like. And it's odder that it's removing a striker that improves the team so much better defensively.
Yeah, it is and it's not. And I'm not doing this to tip my, you know, to pat myself on the back and to give me credit, but I'm going to go back to a game in May. We were in San Jose. And if I'm not mistaken, the score was 3-3. I said it in that game, Christian. They will not be able to win MLS Cup or any trophies if it is Busquets, Suarez, right through the middle with Messi on the field. Because you immediately have three guys that don't defend and three guys that can't. Busquets defends, but he doesn't have the legs to defend. So immediately you cannot high press. You cannot do any of that. They figured it out, and that's why I don't think it's that weird that it's Suarez, because if it is Suarez on the field, then guess who has to come out? Busquets, and you play Yannick Bright. It's got to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And the reality is Busquets announces his retirement. Alba changes it. He announces his. So the emotional component of that, Suarez gets suspended and made the decision for Mascherano. Now Mascherano sees one game, and I've said this multiple times, coaches that are players that have been in the arena, they know when the players know. And after the Nashville game three, Mascherano knew he can't put Suarez in that lineup because there was an energy at home for Miami against Nashville in game three where they looked around and said, good luck trying to play us now. He knew at Cincinnati, he knew everyone else around the world. And this is why I said, I think he benches Suarez. Not because Mascherano's a new manager, not because he's a player that played in the World Cup. Mascherano knows. When the players know what works, it kind of makes it an easy answer. And I'll say this to put a bow on this topic. He isn't doing it if Messi doesn't buy in.
Oh, of course.
And as close as Suarez and Messi are, Messi knows they're better without Suarez starting games.
I just saw some a viral clip. I think it was of Kevin Prince Boateng. Did you see this? I don't know if you saw this about his contract. He's like, oh, the board approved it, the coach approved it, and they were just waiting for Messi to approve his contract. He's like, what? What do you mean Messi approved it? He's like, no, if Messi's okay with you coming to the team, and it's like, all right. So I was like, yeah, I can understand that if it's about Benchy Suarez. If Messi's cool with it, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, because you and I both know, and I'm not saying Messi's coaching the team.
Right.
But if Mascherano says Suarez got to be off the bench, and Messi's like, no. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
There is value to that information. But for the last three games, Christian, I've seen Mascherano directing Lionel Messi. When was the last time you saw a manager directing Messi, looking him in the eye, coaching him, communicating with him in that direct manner? This team's different, and I'm telling you right now, Vancouver is the only team that can give them a taste of their own medicine, and that's why I think MLS Cup is going to be a lot better than if it was San Diego, because I'm telling you right now, San Diego shows up, they get blown out of the door. They get blown out of the building.
Well, and Vancouver beat them, right? At home in...
CONCACAF Champions Cup.
So, but did Messi did play in that game.
Different game, though.
Yeah, very
different.
Very
team.
Different.
Yeah, different team.
Okay, so let's go to the Western Conference Final as well. San Diego gets clapped up.
They did.
In San Diego against Vancouver. And I said Vancouver would make it out of the Western Conference, late in the season, and the addition to Thomas Muller. We had Jaden Nelson on the show, and even the smile on his face and the joy that he was even just doing the interview with us, it was just you can see the confidence that Thomas Muller has instilled. And I don't know if it's specifically with his play on the field, with it in training, with his dad jokes. I don't know what he's doing, but the team was already good. And there is I think we also saw it with the way Sebastian Berhalter also speaks. Mm-hmm. He's instilled the belief and leadership in each of the Vancouver players that I think is what helped them definitely win the Western Conference. But that game against San Diego was just immediate. Like, we're better than you. Like,
it's men against boys.
Yeah.
It was men against boys. It was a naive approach from San Diego. But as expected, this is the first year they've all been together. And so,
yeah, of course,
this is,
yeah.
Right. And so I want to make this abundantly clear. Mikey Varas punched above his weight with this. They did. There's a belief in the system. There's an identity with them. I love everything about San Diego. When I say naive, it's naive because they haven't been in that moment. At home, They were not good against Minnesota. They were lucky to beat Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota was great, but they had a couple better chances in San Diego. And yet Dreyer, who arguably without Messi in the league, he's MVP. But San Diego against Vancouver, it looked like men against boys in multiple different ways, energy-wise, approach-wise, understanding what the moment was. And so you're right, Vancouver rightfully so is an MLS Cup. When the playoffs started, I said the winner of LAFC Vancouver will determine this. LAFC should have beat Vancouver.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
They didn't. Every advantage. But they should have.
Yeah, yeah.
They should have. You have a two-man advantage for 20 minutes. And I say, inexplicably, you have to win that game, and they didn't.
About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the LAFC Philadelphia Union final, Alexis and I have a huge argument about, I'm like, Philadelphia Union should have won that game. Up a man, up a goal. You know, yep. The Gareth Bale moment shouldn't have even happened. And he's like, well, should have. They should have, but they didn't. I'm like, yeah, but you had every advantage. I mean,
That's the game. That's the game, right? So, and why do I say that? I'm not taking anything away from Vancouver. I'm trying to add to what I mean of Vancouver and, more importantly, Thomas Mueller's impact. He's given them the extra 5%. You can't measure it. It's not tangible. It's an intangible belief. It's an intangible understanding that in these moments, he used the best word postgame, warrior. All of a sudden, now there's some warrior to them. You can't measure that.
Yeah.
The way he's brought Vancouver, the city, off the field is unbelievably shocking to me, and how quickly he ingrained himself into the culture. He's showing up at women's professional games and flipping the coin. He's going to the Canucks games. And I saw an unbelievable article from really the fan base of Vancouver. He's doing it with a smile on his face. And I'm speaking for Vancouver and for their messaging, not because I'm from there, but I need people to understand what I mean by this. Vancouver people are attached to the fact that he's happy to be there. And it's interesting, the Canucks fans are talking about, there was very few players that went to the Canucks and they wanted to be there. They wanted to live in Vancouver. They wanted to be in Canada. Thomas Mueller's done that from the beginning. He's given them that 5% that, Christian, anyone that's been in the arena, you can't measure it. They just know. Why do I say that? Because they won against LAFC and had no business winning that game. But there was 53,000 in that building. There was 11 players. Well, actually, at the end of the game, there was only 9. But there was 9 players on the field that knew they were going to win that game. They know they're going to Miami, which is, by the way, the longest trip in the history of the league ever. Okay? 2,800, almost 3,000 miles. And Thomas Mueller knows that this is destined to be Mueller versus Messi, Vancouver versus Miami. But I'm telling everyone listening to this right now, this is not the same Inter Miami team that they played the beginning of the year. And Vancouver knows it. And so this is going to be a different type of game. But Vancouver and the way they play will give Miami a taste of their own medicine. And that's why I think we get ourselves the best MLS Cup versus Miami playing the darlings of the league and the expansion team in San Diego, because the way San Diego plays a high line, Allende may have had 7 goals before halftime.
Yeah, this is a game of like, an MLS Cup final of two, a fair counterbalance. I mean, I don't know. Look, I'm picking Miami because who is not, given how they've been in the playoffs, but I could see a shock here. And I'm going to say, you know, the my circle is already kind of saying they want to spoil the story for Miami, and like basically anybody who is not an Inter Miami fan is probably rooting for the Vancouver Whitecaps because of just how much it would spoil what we sort of feel is people like you who are always are these Miami homers, quote unquote, and stuff like that. So when it's that battle of storylines, is that something that Inter Miami being villainized, is that a fun thing to sort of be the narrator for?
Yeah, I mean, listen, our league needs way more villains, Christian. You and I have had this conversation off air, and quite honestly, I think I've been saying this now for 10, 12 years. You know, I've been in broadcasting now 15 years as a player for for 9 or 10. So you just need it. Every other league has it. The Real Madrid, Barcelona's, the Manchester United, Arsenal's, City's, Liverpool's, Yankees. You've got the Dodgers. We could go through every league in the world, Lakers, and everyone's got villains. We need more of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing to see. It's amazing to see Inter Miami get the best that everyone's got and still be here.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people understand that. I don't think anyone understands that when he comes to town, the city, the stadium, the team, all of it is about making their lives miserable, and they're still scoring 13 goals in 3 knockout round games.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's also impossible to come up with new words to describe him.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It really is. Like, what else do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Sometimes just let the pictures go. I don't know how else do you want me to describe a 38-year-old who led World Cup qualifying in goals scored in South America doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, even in the game against NYCFC, there was a certain pride of like, at least Messi didn't beat us. And it's like, well, I mean, still, Tadi Allende had a hat trick. I mean, that also, that hurts quite a bit.
And Jordi Alba had two of the best assists we've ever seen in league history. So what are you talking about? Of course he did.
So it's like, you don't want Messi to beat you, but he puts his power in everybody else. And they beat you anyway.
Dude, Allende right now is looking like Angel Di Maria. You know what I'm saying?
This is what I hate. I hate that. You know, when in the first goal that Inter Miami scored against FC Cincinnati in the header, Messi's header, Silvetti, he doesn't even look at Messi. He initially passes the ball, looks at the coaching staff like, yeah, I did that. And Messi's pointing at him like, yeah, buddy, you did that. And Silvetti's like, okay, Barcelona, when you call, you know what I mean? It's like he instills, and it's not delusion because he does make everyone that much better, but he's Messi, but he can say, this is how he recruits. I don't know if it's any truth to it. Messi's like, look, they're going to pay you $25 and some Hooters gift cards like Nick Raimondo used to get for the Miami Fusion. But trust me, when you're done with your contract here, you're going to get an incredible offer from another club. Because that seems to be what is happening.
Christian, Yannick Bright and Miami were getting phone calls from some of the biggest clubs in the world. And I think Yannick Bright's really, really good. I do. But you will not convince me that Yannick Bright's getting a call or scouts from Inter Milan and other of these teams are intrigued by Yannick Bright if Messi isn't on the field. Yeah. And the reality is you get more eyeballs. Silvetti scored the game-winning goal in the semifinal of the Under-20 World Cup. Okay?
Yeah.
He knows 100% he's on the radar. Celta Vigo, if I'm not mistaken, still owns Allende's contract. Right? So, but the reality is if you're Silvetti, you say, wait a minute, I get 1 or 2 years with Messi? Yeah.
Yeah.
You could argue, honestly, and I say this not disingenuously, with real sincerity, he's as powerful as playing on an academy team at Manchester United at age 18, 19.
Right, right. I mean, as far as...
All the eyeballs in the world are watching Messi because he is who he is. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, who's that kid from University of New Hampshire? Right. His name's Yannick Bright?
It's one of the biggest, like... recommendations on your LinkedIn profile.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It is just
a resume builder.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. Now the Hooters gift cards, by the way, I think our league's grown a lot where I don't think that's part of it. And I may or may not have used some of those gift cards with Nick Raimondo, so I don't want to disregard the fun that we had.
It's Hard Rock now.
Day.
It's Hard
but
Rock.
Christian,
gift cards. So it's a bit, we're climbing up. It's all good. So, but it's the MLS Cup Finals this Saturday, December 6th, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The confirmed time, I believe it is. That's what the FOT Mob is saying. So,
2:30 kickoff, 1 o'clock coverage starts on Apple TV, and then you've got the game on TSN in Canada, and then on Fox here in the United States.
Love it, man. I'm looking forward to it. We're gonna be doing a live reaction show right after the final here across Yahoo Sports. But Taylor and Jake, you guys are gonna be on the call, and no, man, it's gonna be a fun MLS Cup final. Look, as an NYCFC fan who had to suffer the heartbreak, yeah, well, it would be nice to see some Inter Miami fans a little upset about losing the cup. And then we could always hold that over them. But
New York City was so good the last 12, 14 games of the year. And I think the pit in my stomach that I had for you guys and for New York City was the injuries came at the worst time. I've said Alonso Martinez, I said this on the broadcast, Christian, I think he's in the conversation for the best nine in CONCACAF with the Jonathan Davids. For Costa Rica to miss the World Cup and then for him to tear his ACL, you can't think of a worse 72 hours
it's
for a professional
just so
player.
It's so brutal. And this is a very...
And I love Pascal Janssen.
Arguably, could have been coach of the year. He didn't get my vote. I voted for Bradley Carnell just because of the incredible season that he had in his first year. But Pascal Janssen made a real case for being coach of the year and that turnaround.
Absolutely. And more importantly, he's laid the groundwork for next season. So now the recruiting process, who's the new sporting director?
Yeah,
that's got to come into play. But I'll tell you right now, New York City's a team to watch this offseason.
Well, I know. The previous sporting director, David Lee, who now is at Sporting Kansas City, is a fan of our show. So whoever does replace him, that's going to be one of the prerequisites. You got to be a fan of the Cooligans. So
absolutely.
So MLS Cup final. Okay, real quick, I'm going to toss to the interview with Clint Dempsey. Obviously, we had a conversation, a lot of USMNT talk. With him. We'll be right back. I just want to wrap up with Taylor. So right after this. So here's our conversation with the one and only Clint Dempsey.
Deuce.
Who is the best U.S. men's national team player right now, not wearing a hairpiece? I'm going to go with this guy. The one, the only, Clint Dempsey, everybody.
Hey, y'all gassing me up.
That's all your real hair right there, bro.
Hey, bro. Shoot, you know, Landon got that carefree hair now. He's like, I want the one that looks like a raccoon on top of my head.
Text your boy LD. What's going on, man?
Even with that, I appreciate his vulnerability and candor to be able to do something like that in public. And he's like, yo, this is something I've been self-conscious about. And this, the first week, I was like, LD, come on. You don't need to do this. And now after like a month, I'm like, yo, he has hair now. That's it. I'm going to move on. I'm going to live in a world where Landon Donovan has hair and I'm just going to operate accordingly. How do you feel about it?
Hey, if it makes you happy, that's the most important thing. We all have our weaknesses. I didn't know how to do the right click on the computer, so
you did,
I'm learning technology. I'm, you know, stepping
you
my
know what
game
I'm gonna
up.
Do? I'm gonna put a little toupee on that part of your mouse, so that you always remember.
Yeah.
Oh,
command. Yeah, I'm ready.
We had a couple tech issues before we started, but
we're here now.
We Clint Dempsey, absolutely honored to have you on the show, man. Just because of how recent it is, this international window, Paraguay and Uruguay for the U.S. men's national team, bro, I saw your tweet. I couldn't believe, even after the game against Paraguay, I was also very impressed, but after the game against Uruguay, how are we feeling now? Because it's like, it's not the guys that we're used to seeing, but to put in a performance like this obviously instills in me a lot of confidence for the World Cup. What does it do for you?
Man, I'm happy, man. I wish I could have had a little bit more to finally have those games to talk about in the times that I've got to talk about performances after a game to celebrate how well that they're doing. You know, five games unbeaten. The way in which they're playing with fire, with skill, scoring goals, just how they move in their formation to create space for each other and cause problems for the opposition, and then the opposition that they're playing against being able to do that to them. And I think we have more depth in our squad now, and things are starting to get everybody excited again. And I think you're going to start to see more fans in the seats for these games. But man, I'm happy, bro, because like it was some dark times when you go for last Copa America, CONCACAF Nations League, and some of the friendlies that was leading up to the Gold Cup. You know what I'm saying? So man, I'm happy to see it. It's looking like things are starting to work out now.
In fact, you as a former player, you know, you look at it, and I remember when we did Nations League together, you know, the conversations you and you know, Mo and Charlie were having are coming from a, such a different perspective because you played and you can see certain things or you're watching certain things that the rest of us aren't. Based on what you've seen so far from Mauricio Pochettino, what do you think is new that we didn't have under Greg Berhalter? Because I think Greg Berhalter did a great job. But now we're starting to really see what Mauricio Pochettino's had more time. His influence is bigger now. They're sort of playing under his image. What do you see that he's brought new to this team?
I think just more confidence and more players, right? I think that there's a bigger pool now that he's pulling from and giving people an opportunity to kind of fight for a place in the team. And I think it's making the competition for spots, it's making everybody better in the end of the day because people are having to look over the shoulder a little bit because it's not, this is just going to be our starting 11 every time. I think people are starting to make more of a case for themselves, but also I think that they had that confidence under him to go out there and perform. You see the likes of Freeman taking people on and dribbling in the box and getting his, you know, two goals and his first two goals he scored for the national team. You know, you're seeing Diego Luna, a guy that you didn't see under Berhalter. You know what I mean? It's good to see Gio Reyna back getting that confidence and doing what he does with the national team. We'd like to see that more at the club level. But yeah, man, I just think that the way that he has them playing, they change up their formations, but still just the way they move, the way they fight for each other, not to say that there weren't periods of time that they didn't have that under Berhalter. I just think seems like Pochettino has brought more guys along with them on the journey. So I'm looking forward to see who that 18 is going to be or 23 is going to be and ultimately who that starting 11 is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the game against Paraguay, that was kind of a fun and exciting moment. Obviously, the big fight, the big scrum, Alex Freeman and like, you know, bloody lip or whatever. We did a live show the other day and I was talking about how, you know, Diego Luna breaking his nose and bloody nose and how much, Pochettino respected that. And then also Alex Freeman getting into a little bit of a scratch. It feels like Pochettino's telling the players like, yo, if you ain't getting bloody, you ain't fighting somebody, I don't know if you're going to make this team. So there's a little bit of toughness that I don't think like Pochettino necessarily displays all the time, but there must be something going on in the locker room where the players are really like, yo, I will punch a guy for this coach.
It's very Argentinian.
Yeah.
But I think the best teams that you're ever on is a team that you feel like you can fight for a place to get in the team. Because there's some teams that you're on and it just seems like this is kind of a set team that they have and they're not going to make too many changes. With this, he seems like, hey, if you're not doing it for me, you can get out. And if you're doing it for me, then I'm going to give you an opportunity to make your dream come true. What bigger dream than playing a World Cup on home soil? Seems like everybody's fighting for it because you don't have really a lot of competitive games, but he's figured out a way to make them competitive in terms of the mindset that he's got these players playing in to fight for a spot in the team. So I'm excited about it.
Who surprised you the most? Who do you think is like, yo, that guy deserves a spot on that 18 that I didn't think would be there?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think people that have surprised me just in the last game, I mean, Freeman, him being more confident, getting forward. Arson, he continues to figure out ways to get assists and cause problems. Berhalter with his delivery on set pieces with, you know, his passing, but also not starting to chip in with goals now. Gio, I didn't think that you didn't know what his situation was going to be, if he's going to get back into the team. He's getting goals and assists, goal and two assists in two games. Diego Luna, you know, the kid that broke his nose like you talked about, January camp, got his chance to kind of get into the team. I mean, for me, January camp was huge in 2006 because I was fighting for a spot to get into the team to go to World Cup. It's basically between me and Santino Corinta, and I ended up beating him out of that spot. So, it just goes to show you that even in, you know, when we get into January, there's still going to be a lot of changes as we build to who some of these new faces might be that get into this team. But Chris Richards also, I mean, I could just keep on naming for real.
Name the whole squad.
You know what I'm saying?
How about this? Can we, you know, we've had a bit of a debate on the show. I see it online as well. For who's taking corners and set pieces, I think Pulisic is done, bro. I mean, with all due respect, what Berhalter, what Arston, what Tolkien was able to do on those set, the corners just look different. They have a different whip, they have a different bend.
Yeah.
And it's like it creates such a much more like lethal opportunity on those set pieces. Are you okay with the idea of like Pochettino being like, all right, Christian, I think we're done.
Get to the top of the box, my dude.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's like you got to show it in training, right? And you got to show it in the game. Whoever got the hot foot, they go. Whoever got the confidence at taking penalties, that's the person that steps up. Yeah. But if you miss a few, guess what? Somebody else is going to come in and be taking penalties. So I think it's one of those situations where it's not always going to just be set in stone unless it's it's undeniable what they're doing, right? I think it's something that you can always have a little bit of room for movement in terms of who's going to be in those spots, right? So whoever's doing the business, hey, they get the task to take them.
One of the most important moments in MLS history was, I think, when you decided to come play in MLS. When you saw the atmosphere in Seattle and you said, yo, I want to be a part of this. You came, you moved to MLS, and I think it gave MLS this next level of credence of like, yo, someone who's very much still in the prime of his career, still doing it big, and one of the biggest names in the U.S. men's national team is coming to play here. Another really big moment is them switching to this, what they're calling a summer-spring schedule, but we all know that means fall-winter, right? yeah. What do you think about this move?
I think it's good. I think it's good to get on the same schedule as everybody else, as Europe, as the other big teams. Playing that summer ball, bro. It's hot. Like playing 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock kickoffs in Kansas City and Houston. That's for the birds, man. I think you want to see the quality of play on the pitch. And I think the reason why it wasn't done before, not everybody had their own soccer specific stadium. You had a lot of teams that were sharing stadiums with NFL teams and stuff like that. So it was difficult to find the balance between, you know, NFL and MLS of being able to be playing in the stadiums, but also the weather that you have in the winter in certain places like Montreal and New England. I mean, it gets cold as hell in January and February and stuff like that. So, but I think it's good, man. I think ultimately you're going to see more exciting play by, you know, playing during those months than I think playing in the heat of the summer.
What's from a player's perspective, especially a player that is being transferred into the league? I'm curious, like, what are the problems of having those negotiations, like, either during your season or during your off season when MLS is...
You mean like making it more difficult to sign European
talent?
Yeah,
like that, because that's always that yeah. People are saying that the best, the positive from this is that the especially all the GMs are all for this, because it's like now we can have negotiations during the same off season, during the same winter transfer window and stuff like that. So from a player that moved into MLS, was there anything uncomfortable or difficult about the league schedule when you're playing on the European calendar?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was still in preseason, and then when I kind of came into Seattle, it was like, all right, come on, bro.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for the season, if I'm being honest with you. And I got off to a slow start. Other things is getting used to playing on turf again, and then getting used to all the travel and the time differences. And if I'm being real with y'all, just the physios and the training staff was not had as much depth as what you had in Europe in terms of getting the proper treatment to have you feeling ready to play at your best. But
You saying Jordan Morris's father wasn't up to par with Tottenham?
Bro, he's good people. He's good people, bro. But at the same time, like, there's a different level of what I had at Fulham and Tottenham than what I had at Seattle. No disrespect,
of course.
But it's just the truth, bro. And then dealing with the travel that you have in MLS and flying East Coast to West Coast, you know, 5-6 hour flights, different time zones. You know what I mean? It starts to wear on your body more, and you need to have even more, I think, of a staff behind you to keep everybody at the top level. But, you know, that's just some things I experienced. I mean, I don't know if things have changed now. You see that they have their own like chartered flights, which wasn't the case for us, you know, having the middle seats and being next to the bathroom in the mask. And if you're a college lacrosse team and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you had to fight to try to get the right to like wear normal clothes. So you didn't have to deal with those type of questions when you're on some of these flights instead of everybody wearing the same tracksuit. So for some people, it's more of an adjustment than others. But I think it's good, like you said, for transfer windows to try to get the best that you can. And hopefully MLS can get to the point that there's not much. The salary cap gets a lot bigger. So the teams that want to invest more, they can go and do that.
You're a Nacogdoches boy. So I want to know, would you rather play end of November in Toronto? Or would you rather play noon, middle of the summer, August in Frisco?
I'd rather do the first one, man, when it's cool. Yeah. I mean, when it's cool, you can run a lot more. I mean, that was the thing for me about playing in England. It's like, I feel like I never got tired over there. When I came back to the States, I mean, especially when you start to get older and you're playing, when your shoes like feel like you just jumped in a pool and you have to change your shoes at halftime, like every game, because you're sweating so much, man. It's different playing in the heat and the MLS in the summer.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
I mean, I would even go as far, even as a fan, it's hard to watch MLS in the summer as well. I mean, this during the Apple.
Yeah, for years, I was like, why are you giving me a scarf? It's 1,000 degrees outside.
But there, at least.
Unless it's a wet, like a cooling scarf or something like that.
During the Apple deal, like the game starting later has been a little bit better.
That's better.
But there's the occasional like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock game.
That's
I'm like,
birds.
I remember NYCFC against Inter Miami. I'm like, I'm with my kid. I'm like, bro, it's like legit hot. It's like, even as a fan, just to watch, I can imagine. So I even feel bad for the players. Same thing with the Club World Cup. I felt the same way. I'm like, damn, this is.
That was 1,000 degrees.
It was really tough. Last question, I promise. When you especially you talking about attacking players, getting touches on the ball. When it comes to the striker situation with the U.S. men's national team, we see Balogun or really whoever is up top is really only getting about 20, 25 touches a game. And that's like 25 is like kind of high. Is that something that concerns you? I mean, Balogun seems to do a lot with those few amount of touches, but I would love to see more. Well, what do you think of the striker situation right now?
Well, I'm excited about the depth that we have, and people are starting to step up and create that competition for spots. Like you talk about Balogun, the goals he scored, and Haji Wright, and then you got Pepe being back fit and pushing for to get into the team. And then I just think we got more depth there. But yeah, it just comes with people, I think, more confidence and getting more games with the players that are around you at a consistent level in terms of having your best 11 in every camp. And then building those relationships and getting that chemistry. But like you said, you only can do the most of what you got. And when you think about strikers, a lot of times they go time without getting that ball, right? That it's just, but they know that they got to get in the box, and the way that they're going to make their money is get those goals. But it kind of depends on the striker that you are. For me, I'd be trying to drop. The coach would be upset, but I never was a number nine, though. Even though if they played me kind of in that position, that's not me, bro. Like, I'm not going to be, you know, stretching the field with my speed, which I don't have. I'm going to be getting on that half turn, getting in the pockets, and, you know, like you talked about with Seattle, Oba, he stretches the field. I'm able to play him, then I'm able to get in the box and get it back. You know what I mean? So, like, a good comparison I had said in the past was, you know, you have Balogun and Christian. You know, when me and Josie were kind of playing together with the national team, and just I look forward to seeing their connection better. I know that Christian has a great connection also with Haji Wright. They were boys that grew up playing together as well. So yeah, man, I'm not worried right now because of the goals that we're creating and the chances that we're getting. But yeah, it's something they can work on, because I know that the strikers are going to be more confident with more touches they get.
Without a doubt.
Very nice.
All right, Clint Dempsey, brother, thank you so much for joining us. It's always an honor. You're welcome here anytime. We can help you with any computer or IT issues. Hey,
yeah, bring over any electronics you got.
Help me out, bro. It's like, Nacogdoches didn't teach you right.
Yeah, no, Nacogdoches didn't teach you this.
It's a little bit different.
Bring over your air fry. We'll show you how to use it. They got you.
They still use their rotary phones out in Nacogdoches, bro.
Hey, bro, I got a beeper, bro. I don't even know what that is.
You know what? I actually
believe
that.
Oh, the rotary phones. Oh, hey, my grandma had one for real. My grandma had a rotary phone for real.
Clint Dempsey, absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Legend.
Appreciate y'all.
Shout out to Clint Dempsey. You got any Clint memories? Anything fun?
Absolutely. I played with him with the Revs when he first came up. I played with him with the national team.
What's the first thing that comes? It's in the fun improv game. What's the first thought when I say Clint Dempsey? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
The first time I ever heard him freestyle.
Okay. Well, we've seen. Yep. I haven't seen a freestyle. I've seen the produced work.
Oh, but no, never... I saw the freestyle, and I was like, okay.
All right.
I'll never forget it. It was like four of us in here, and the rookie came right in. Clint Dempsey started freestyle. I was like, oh,
yeah, okay. I mean,
he's kind of cooler than I am.
Yeah, he got some bars. I mean, when he put out that, like, rap video, I would, you know, it could easily be cringy.
Don't tread on me.
Yeah, but it was, you know what, he's always been that person. He's never like, oh, I just did this out of like a fun, a goofy little thing. He's like, no, this is who I am. I'm from
Nagadoches. This is who he is.
Yeah. And
now to really, I mean, to be serious for 30 seconds or so, there was a guy that is who he is. He's going to be who he wants to be, takes care of his family. He will go to war in any game against anyone, and he will believe that he's going to win that battle. There's very few guys that are like that, and you want that on your side. And I think that's the first thing when I think of the soccer player, the footballer in Clint Dempsey. That's what comes to mind. He'll show up against anyone, and he's going to try to beat you. And I love that.
I love it, too. I mean, and even from his media career now, is also brings a level of authenticity. Like, let's say, I spot a lot of former USMNT guys. You are I'm a great player, made for media. You know how to sell this. You know how to do this. And yep. and Clint is just like, he's going to be the freestyle rapper that also knows about ball. And he's just like, I ain't going to change for anybody. Like, yeah. And it's a great perspective as well.
You know what the best part about all of this is? He made fun of me a lot for being a golfer, for loving golf, and it is literally all he is doing now, and I love it. And By the way, Clint, when you hear this, I told you, it's good. And I can't imagine how frustrating that sport is for him, because I saw him get frustrated on the soccer field. Dude. I can't imagine seeing him on, like, the tee box losing a ball.
I did an NYCFC charity golf thing like 2-3 years ago. I'm the worst golfer in the world. I mean, it just showed, like, you know, I came from Sunset Park, Brooklyn. You know,
you're Clint, not playing a lot of golf.
I'm not playing a lot of golf. Not a lot of golf. Me and Clint, really, that's not really our upbringing. We didn't. There wasn't a lot of green grass where we were.
And nobody's gonna find this surprise. I may or may not have been born on a country club first tee box.
Yeah. Your haircut tells me that exactly, Taylor. So all good. I have to take lessons, because this is a level of adulthood and networking that, you know, the people that were born in the country club, they ain't coming to Sunset Park, Brooklyn for some Dominican food. I gotta go where you are.
you gotta come where we are. Absolutely. And I will tell you, these are two dads talking to each other.
Right.
You want to learn to be good at it, because it gets you away for 4.5 hours that you just are like, listen, right. This is my hobby. This is what I got to do.
Okay. How am I supposed to grow?
If I'm not practicing, how do I teach my kids that hard work doesn't pay off? Follow where I'm going?
Oh, yeah.
Follow my lead, kid. Follow my lead.
All right. Yes, I have to
play. Just don't have 4 Long Island iced teas on the way home.
I have to play 18 holes with this state senator. I have no other choice, honey. Taylor Twellman, thank you so much for joining me as the special guest co-host today on The Cooligans. I don't think anyone noticed the difference between you and Alexis Guerrero's.
I disagree. I think a lot of people missed Alexis, and if they're at this point of the podcast, they're probably like, is Alexis coming back? Please.
So, please? A reminder, the MLS Cup final this weekend, Saturday, 1 p.m. Coverage, 1 p.m. Eastern coverage, 2:30 kickoff. It's going to be great. We're going to be watching it as well. So, and if you want to watch some post-game stuff with the Cooligans, join us here on the Cooligans, either on YouTube or across all Yahoo Sports channels as well. Taylor Twellman, you're the absolute best. Thanks so much for subbing in today. We really appreciate it. And everybody, take care. And any parting words on behalf of Taylor Twellman? You got anything to say to people?
I love you guys. And by the way, for the record, I love everything about it. And when you send me messages that I am too much of a homer on one side, I love everything about that because you're fans and I love it.
Okay. Like the, what is it? The famous Eric Adams say that my haters will turn to waiters at the table of success. That's basically what Taylor said. Take care, everybody.
Cut her mic. See ya. I'm out.